Without much further ado, we'll have Stephen as the first speaker.
I thought I'd start off the evening by giving a bit of history of the ploughshares movement, because it's very important, and maybe quite a few of you don't know what this strange movement is, or that it's been going for almost 20 years. As you know, the ploughshares movement takes its name from the old Jewish prophets Isaiah and Micah, who talk of beating swords into ploughshares. It's a very vivid image. It's 4,000 years old, and it's still very appropriate today. And the ploughshares movement began with some Christian peace activists in the States, who Frank knows. In the end of the 70s, they were facing an enormous nuclear weapons arms race with the US versus the Soviet Union. And they were looking for ways of resisting this non-violently. And in one of their meetings, they were studying the Bible, and they were looking at this phrase, beating swords into plowshares, and someone suggested, why don't we do just that? Why don't we take household hammers and go and symbolically disarm these weapons systems? And so that's what a group of eight of them did. In September 1980, they went into a factory in Pennsylvania called King of Prussia, and they made their way through the factory, and they found the unarmed nose cones to MX nuclear missiles, and with their hammers they disarmed the nose cones. They just banged on them, and they were the first sort of act of unilateral nuclear disarmament there's ever been. And they waited by their disarmed work, and they were arrested and subsequently went to trial. Now, they didn't know what was going to happen. They didn't know what prison sentence they were going to get. They didn't know how their families would react. They didn't know how their communities would react. They didn't know how the wider peace movement and so on. So it's very much a sort of step into the dark. And initially, they received up to 10 years in prison for that first action. And that went through a series of appeals. And the appeals only actually finished in 1989, 9 years after the original action. But by that time, something called the ploughshares movement had been born. And the ploughshares movement is quite a sort of raggle-taggle mixture of people who take this phrase, beating swords into ploughshares, and they try and apply it with different degrees of symbolism. And since that first ploughshares 8 action in 1980, there have been over 60 such actions around the world. And they've not just been in the United States, also been actions in Germany, in Sweden, in the Netherlands, in Britain, and in Australia. And we've actually scattered around the crowd. We've got various people who've taken part in previous actions. We have Per, who's taken part in several actions in Sweden and one in America. There's Fritz, who was part of the Dutch ploughshares movement many years ago, and so on. So there's this continuity of actions that have been happening under the banner of ploughshares. And the way I would describe a ploughshares action would be, quite simply, it's an action where people spend some time preparing in community. It's an action which takes inspiration from the prophecies of Micah and Isaiah. It's not necessarily a Christian action, but it's people who want to come together and claim that prophecy and enact it. It's an action thoroughly committed to non-violence. Everyone takes utmost care, absolute care, not to harm any living thing. And people attempt to symbolically disarm a weapon system with hand tools, and then they take full responsibility for their actions. Now, look at those points a bit. The commitment to non-violence, hopefully, is quite obvious. It's very much to do with our means and our ends, that the vision we want is a disarmed world and a non-violent world, and so the means we use are explicitly non-violent ones. In terms of taking full responsibility for the actions, I think this is quite an important part of ploughshares, and it really distinguishes ploughshares actions from, say, sabotage.
In a sabotage action, your intent is to do disruption, do damage, and get out of there and remain anonymous. It's not sabotage actions aren't so much about communication or engaging. They're about a very sort of pure form of direct action. Whereas plowshares actions, a big part of plowshares actions is communicating. And it's not just putting a weapon system out of action maybe for a minute or maybe a day or a month. It's about communicating the vision and the methods and inviting other people to engage with that vision, whether it's at public meetings or in magazines or in the court case. In terms of the symbolism, there's always a symbolic aspect to plowshares actions, but different groups have interpreted this in different ways. Some groups have just gone for the lightest hammer tap on a weapon system, and that is their disarmament. Other groups have decided that a stronger symbol is to go for maximum disarmament of a particular weapon system. So some people sort of say that's a mix between symbolic action and effective action, but that's a bit of a simplistic division, because some people would say disarming as much as you can is a much more powerful symbol than just disarming a little. So there's some creative tensions within the plowshares movement. And the reaction of the state to plowshares has really varied enormously as well. And I think that's one of the... I've been in court with the defendants today, and I think one of the stresses of going through the court cases, it's not just familiarising yourself with the procedure and coping with your nervousness about speaking in public. You're always hanging over your head is, am I going to get 6 months or 4 years or, you know, and that's a very stressful thing to cope with. And particularly in the United States, the risks they take in terms of prison sentences have been as high as 18 years in the United States for plowshares actions. And there's, you know, it's very common in the States for people to get 2, 3, 4 years in prison for these actions. Going back to one of the early points, in terms of communal preparation, I think this is very vital. And one of the, my understanding of nonviolent action is, one of the great things about it is for the cowards and the weak. And I think there's always, I think plowshares plays with a slight sort of dramatic danger in that they can come across as very heroic actions. And I think anyone involving themselves in these actions has to be aware of that danger. But the trouble with heroism is the heroes are out there, and a lot of people, it can be very easy to sort of live vicariously through the heroes and so on. I think it's really important to emphasize the only way you get to do these actions is by preparing in community, and that's the way you overcome your own fears. And one of the, Gandhi often talked about nonviolent action as an experiment. I think one of the experiments of plowshares is how you form communities and you go through your fears within that preparation, and that might take 3 months, 6 months, a year, 2 years, and you get to a point where you are able to act, however sort of frightened or cowardly you see yourself. And I think that's quite a scary thing, because I remember when I first got in touch with plowshares activists in the States, writing to a prisoner called Martin Holliday, who just got, I think he got 8 years in prison for disarming a missile silo. And that was my big mistake, was writing to him in prison, because he wrote back and I saw that he was mortal and wrote in ink. And part of that communication, I think it wasn't explicit, but from him, he was sort of inviting me to consider such actions. And that was my downfall in some ways. I'll just do a little brief sketch about the European plowshares movement, and then who's the next speaker after? Right. Towards the end of the 80s, I'd made contact with several plowshares prisoners and had also begun to make contact with people in Sweden and Germany and the Netherlands who were exploring plowshares and had been involved in actions. And this sort of awful dawning inside me was going, I too, you know, I could take part in such an action. And I felt that it was very... felt that it would be a very useful contribution to the anti-nuclear and anti-military struggle to try and experiment with this form of action in Britain. So it took about a couple of years to find people prepared to join me with that. And it's very much at a time when not many people in Britain, well, even in the British peace movement, knew much about plowshares. So when we first acted, and that was in 1990, at an American base called Upper Hayford near Oxford, we really didn't know what would happen in lots of ways. I didn't know how my parents would react, I didn't know how the peace movement would react, we didn't know how the state would react. In some ways, we were very lucky. We had, even though groups like CND, the Campaign for National Disarmament, at a top level, they were quite against us. It took us quite a long time to even get a mention in their newspaper, Sanity, and I later learned that the editor got into quite a lot of trouble for even mentioning our action. So the sort of more the hierarchies of the peace movement found it quite difficult. But I just remember, it's quite interesting being at this court case, remembering back to our Upper Hayford court case, and the level of support was just phenomenal. It was just great. People, like for this court case, came from other countries, and you can't underestimate how happy all of us make the defendants feel. Unfortunately, in our court case, we tried to present a legal defence and to say that we were preventing a crime. With the F-111, we were particularly interested not in just being an anti-nuclear action, but also looking at how Western military forces threaten the Third World, both with conventional weapons. And the F-111, some of you may remember, had been used to bomb Libya in 1986. And F-111s could carry nuclear weapons. So we saw militarism as a continuum where there were nuclear weapons at one end and then a whole level of conventional weapon systems. And with every plowshares action, people try and bring different political insights. So like with the Bread Not Bombs plowshares, they're very much looking at trying to look at how Trident is part of a system which ensures the Western economic dominance. And with the Seeds of Hope plowshares action by the women several years ago, they were focusing on the export of Hawks, which isn't a nuclear device, nuclear weapon. So we had. So today's been the first. Has it been the first day of the trial? Yeah, today's the first day, and we had a very similar day. Well, we didn't have a similar day. In our trial, basically at the end of the first day, the judge said you have no legal argument, and the second day we were found guilty because it was a question of did you do it or not, and we'd left our names and dresses in the cockpit. So that wasn't a very contentious issue. But fortunately, we were. Then sort of really worried about getting 2, 3, 4 years, and we only got 15 months in prison and served 6 of that, which was, again, the level of support we got in prison was really made the world of difference. And it was a particularly difficult time because it was during the Gulf War and F-111s were being used in the Gulf War and stuff like that. I remember getting a photograph from Kieran, because Kieran acted at the beginning of the Gulf War with other people on a B-52 bomber in America. And since then in Britain, after our action in 1990, there was another one in 1993 against Hawk, BAE Hawks. That was at the Stevenage factory by someone called Chris Cole. And then there was the Seeds of Hope action in 1996. And then probably, hopefully, you're quite aware of this more ongoing campaign called Trident Plowshares 2000, which Bread Not Bombs Group is cooperating with. So I'll wrap it up now. Basically to say, get involved, I suppose, in whatever way you can. And if you can spare a few hours over the next couple of days, come down to court. There's things happening outside court. If you get on the court rota, there's a limited number of seats, but if you go and see whoever's got the black file, come in and see the wheels of justice. If Stellan and Ann-Britt and Annika are sentenced and back in prison, write to them, visit them, take the newsletter and see where it leads you, really. Okay.
we had to have question and answers at the end of people have spoken, right at the end of everyone. And next speaker is Rowan Tilley from the Seeds of Hope Committee.